This is Night Call. Broadcast live with host Russ Gibb. And tonight's guest, Senator Daniel Brewster of Maryland. Tonight's subject, what is the war doing to the people of Vietnam? You participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Now here's Night Call host, Russ Gibb.
Hello, night people. This is Gibb. Standing by in Washington, D.C. is the Honorable Daniel Brewster, Democratic Senator from Maryland. Senator Brewster served or is serving on the Armed Services Committee of the Senate and recently returned from an investigation or an inspection tour of Vietnam. Now, if you'd like to ask Senator Brewster a question on tonight's topic, what is the war doing to the people of Vietnam, or make a comment, give us a call here at Night Call. Now, our national number is area code 313-846-6601. Now, remember, you may call from anywhere collect. Please make that call station to station. Our Night Call number, area code 313-846-6601. Our Night Call operators are on duty, our lines are open, and we invite you to join us here on Night Call. If you get a busy signal, please do not become discouraged. Just hang up and dial us again. Area code 313-846-6601. Our topic tonight, what is the war doing to the people of Vietnam? Senator Brewster, why are we in Vietnam?
We learned our lesson in the 1930s when the Italians invaded Ethiopia, when the Japanese invaded Manchuria, and when we caved in at Munich.
What was that lesson?
The lesson was that we cannot tolerate aggression. If we do, it becomes infinitely more expensive in the cost of men and money later on. We have given our word that we would defend South Vietnam, and we cannot back out now. It's a tough battle, but we're doing the right thing, and we are being responsible international citizens.
What if the people of Vietnam, of South Vietnam, decide that they no longer want to carry the war on? What would be America's response?
Well, now, you must remember that we are there at the invitation of their government.
The present General Key government, or was this the Diem regime?
Well, we were there at the invitation of the Diem regime and also the present government right now. And the minute they would uninvite us, then we, of course, would leave. We have absolutely no territorial designs on this small country, or for that matter, on any country, any place in the world. But we are helping them at their invitation, and we are defending their freedom, and in a sense, the freedom of all people. If this little country goes under the red regime of Hanoi or Peking, shortly thereafter, I am convinced, its small neighbors will go under also, Laos, Cambodia, Thailand, Burma, Malaysia, Indonesia, the entire archipelago will go under the domination of Red China. And this would be disastrous for the United States.
General Eisenhower once thought that nearly 80% of the people, the peasants in North and South Vietnam, supported or felt that Ho Chi Minh, the leader of North Vietnam, was a very popular leader, and that they thought that he was doing a good job. How do we reconcile that with our present feeling toward Ho Chi Minh?
Ho Chi Minh is certainly a very popular figure throughout both North and South Vietnam. This has resulted by virtue of the truly nationalistic war that the Vietnamese as a country, a total country, waged against the French prior to 1954. The situation has changed very drastically since 1954, since the time of the Geneva Accord.
communist-orientated North Vietnam, the Ho Chi Minh government, is it controlled by the Chinese or the Russians? Or is this a nationalistic communist movement that we're talking about in North Vietnam?
I would say that Hanoi or Ho Chi Minh control the policy of North Vietnam. They clearly direct the military efforts in South Vietnam. The VC or the Viet Cong were under their control. Now, without question of a doubt, the influence of Peking and, to some degree, Moscow is certainly felt. The sophisticated weapons that they now have are supplied either by Red China or by the USSR. They do not have the ability to build these weapons themselves.
Do the South Vietnamese have the ability to make weapons themselves?
They have the ability to make them, but it depends how sophisticated we're talking about the weapons. The answer is probably no. Neither the North nor the South have the real ability to wage modern warfare with the most sophisticated electronic equipment that we're now using.
Would you say that we're in a real war in Vietnam, Senator?
Are we in a real war? That is a tough question. We are fighting with one arm behind our back and sort of with one leg in a cast. We are using only a very small portion of our real power. If we wanted to use our full power, we could utterly devastate North Vietnam tomorrow. We could destroy every city and wipe out every military unit. We do not choose to do this. This is not war in the sense that we smashed Nazi Germany. Rather, we are trying to use that force that is necessary to prevent aggression. And really, rather than win a war, we're trying to win a peace. We're trying to use our economic and social forces, backed up with our military, to try to prevent the aggression that is happening day in and day out from the North.
Now, the aggression is the actual troops of the Viet Minh.
Yes, now,
Viet Cong are South Vietnamese who are supporting the North, is that correct?
Well, it all depends on how you use the terms. The war, the aggression, is clearly directed from Hanoi. There's no question about that, and we have, when I last heard, located at least some seven or more regiments of regular North Vietnamese troops, each regiment with over 2,000 men, and they are uniformed, well-organized, well-directed fighting men. We have intercepted their radio commands. We have captured their battle orders. We have a limited number of their prisoners. We know what is going on. They've been sent down there in regiment size to make trouble, and they are tough, and they are mean. They go into these small towns, and there's no type of terrorism that you and I can discuss that they have not indulged in.
Well, you would say, then, we are in a real war in Vietnam, in the sense that Americans are being killed.
Well, when I was with the... I spent the a full week in the I Corps area, and that is the northern sector of South Vietnam, with the 3rd Marine Division. And just to give you an example, we had in this division 1,270 wounded men that had gotten Purple Hearts. We had 157 KIA killed in action.
And American boys.
These are our people. And so it's getting pretty tough.
Well, if this sounds like war to me, why haven't we declared war according to the Constitution, and I'm quoting now, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 2, and I believe it states that only Congress shall have the right to declare war. Why hasn't Congress declared a war then?
Well, also under the Constitution, foreign policy is the prerogative of the chief executive, and by and large, our foreign policy is conducted by the chief executive. Congress has the last say in so much as we can control the purse strings. And if we don't like what we're doing in international affairs, the Congress can cut off the money, which will very effectively cut off any international activity. We would make a drastic mistake, in my judgment, to declare war. When you declare war, then you use the entire might of the nation. Thermonuclear devices, conventional bombing. This is the last thing in the world we want to do. I think we might declare peace and say, let's end this.
Senator, there seems to be a lot of confusion in the minds of many Americans as to why we are in Vietnam. Would you say that there is a lack of information about our purposes? Is this part of the reason for the confusion?
There's a great deal of misunderstanding about Vietnam and about our policy there. We had to make a tough decision a year ago. Did we care about Southeast Asia? Were we going to back up our word? Or were we going to just stand idly by after we'd said we would defend their freedom and withdraw and let the communists take over? And so we made the hard decision, namely that we would use our men and our money to defend them. And so we went in strength a year ago, and early this year. I'm completely convinced, had we not gone into South Vietnam early this year, this country would have long since gone under the Hanoi regime.
But
and
by
hard on its heels, I think all its neighbors would have gone under too.
By your own comment, however, you said that Ho Chi Minh was a popular leader. Does it necessarily follow that all communist leaders are bad for their people? I mean, this seems to be the assumption that we're making here, that any communist leader is not really for his people.
Well, I won't make that generalization.
Oh.
But,
Do you think
communism and the governments they've established in the USSR, in Red China, in East Germany, in North Vietnam are not acceptable from our standards of civil liberties and peace and the recognition of the rights of the individual? This is another form of totalitarianism that we just have found completely unacceptable, and so therefore we oppose it. It's not entirely unlike fascism. When you go all the way to the left or all the way to the right, you almost make a complete circle. And you have the absolute end of individual liberty and no respect for the dignity and rights of the individual. And this is what we now have in the communist countries.
Our guest tonight, Democratic Senator from Maryland, Senator Daniel Brewster. Our topic, what is the war doing to the people of Vietnam? You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Well, I can't this Sunday. I'm playing golf, and the following Sunday I promise to take the kids to the beach.
Uh-huh.
Man's got to spend some time with his kids, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Besides, we seem to get along just fine without church. You know, it's up to the individual. Gee, look at the time. I got to run. But anyhow, we'll trot along to church one of these days.
Uh-huh. Well, how about 2 weeks from Sunday?
Oh, I never planned that far ahead. 2 weeks, the whole world could blow up by then.
That's right.
Where's you get the idea? You could make it all by yourself. Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by your Council of Churches.
This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Hello again, Night People, and welcome to Night Call. Our topic tonight, what is the war doing to the people of Vietnam? And we have as our guest the Honorable Daniel Brewster, Democratic Senator from Maryland. And Senator Brewster has just recently returned from Vietnam, so is well qualified to comment on the Vietnam situation. If you'd like to ask the Senator a question or make a comment, give us a call here at Night Call. Area code 313-846-6601. Now remember, you may dial us direct, and if you wish, you may make that call collect. You may reverse the charges. Area code 313-846-6601. We invite you to join us here on Night Call. Senator Brewster, I have a caller standing by in Pueblo, Colorado, a listener on KKAN, Mr. Gary Hendricks. Good evening, Gary. Speak right up, sir. You're on Night Call.
Two questions tonight.
Yes, sir.
We're told here that the people in Vietnam are of high spirit and they are behind the cause. Now, I'd like to ask you two questions, Senator. Do they hear of these groups in the United States that, for instance, donate blood to the North Vietnamese and things like this? And secondly, why doesn't the United States government do something? For instance, a group that I'm with, we talk over these problems, and we've come to the conclusion that maybe something ought to be done. And we wondered why there hasn't been any trials for treason, things like this.
Of the American citizens, is this what you're saying, Gary?
Yes, these people that send the blood to the North Vietnamese. Recently, they've been sending leaflets to our own soldiers. And I don't know anything else that would be anything that would, just slap the government right in the face. And I wondered why nothing's being done about this.
Senator?
When I was overseas, in Vietnam, and talked to our people, at every level, platoon, company, division, hospitals, the one question they often ask me, are our people proud of us? Do they understand why we're here? What is the score on the demonstrations at home? And I explained, in my opinion, that the demonstrations against our policy came from a small but very vocal minority. But in a sense, Mr. Hendricks, what we're doing in Vietnam is protecting the right of people to dissent. In other words, we recognize the right, freedom of speech, freedom of assembly. It's like Voltaire once said, I disagree completely with what you say, but I defend to the death your right to say it. And though at times the dissent in this country to some degree hurts our international image, we must recognize the right of people to disagree with their government.
Senator?
And this is our way of doing things. Anybody, you or I, can say that President Johnson doesn't know what he's talking about. He makes no sense, and nobody will throw us in jail for doing that.
Senator, the North Vietnamese, they do not have that right to demonstrate against their government, do they?
In no communist country do they have the right, or the people have the right, to stand up and say, I disagree with the government. I disagree with the president. to cross a wall.
So actually, in one sense, the demonstrators are proving America's greatness in the fact that we allow them to demonstrate.
Well, this is guaranteed in the Bill of Rights of the Constitution of the United States, and we believe in this very, very firmly. This is what we one of the bedrock basis on which we established our country, the right to dissent and speak up freely and without fear from the government.
Gary?
And no communist country has the same right.
Gary, do you think people should have the right to dissent?
Oh, yes, very definitely. But what I'm wondering about, where is the line drawn between demonstration and treason?
Senator?
Well, there's a very clear answer there. When you break the law, if you dodge the draft, burn your draft card, fail to carry out your legal duties, then we have statutes and courts and a system of jurisprudence that take effect.
Gary, I want to thank you for calling Night Call.
Well, thank you for letting me.
Thank you for your comment, sir. Mr. Gary Hendricks, a gentleman from Pueblo, Colorado, listening on KKAN. Let's go out to Indianapolis, Indiana now. A listener on WFBM, Mr. Bob Schack. Good evening, Bob, and welcome to Night Call. Your comment, please, sir.
Well, I'd like to ask the Senator this. He said that we would leave Vietnam if we were asked to by the present government. Now, I read in the magazine Saturday Review an article by Norman Cousins about 2 weeks ago. He said that Henry Cabot Lodge, testifying before Congress, said that if we were asked to leave, we would not leave. Now, I'm wondering, the Senator Brewster refute Senator Lodge's, the Henry Cabot Lodge's testimony, or was that report inaccurate?
Our forces are in South Vietnam at the invitation of their government. At any time that they want us to pull out, we will do so forthwith. I'm not familiar with the quotation that you refer to, but there's no question about this. We have no territorial designs on this small country, and at any time that they don't want us there, all they have to do is say so, and we will pull out.
Senator, had you an opportunity to read the report on the Vietnam situation in the November 29th issue of U.S. News and World Report? Have you had a chance to see that article?
Yes, I have.
There's a comment in there by one of their reporters to the effect that 40% of the general staff of General Key's army in the South are ex-North Vietnamese. Now, could it possibly be that these people have a vested interest in not allowing the communists to take over? Because if they take over, they would probably be immediately liquidated. Could it be possible that they never will sue for peace?
Well, there's no question in the world that should we withdraw, that the communists would take over, and their retaliation against the established government there would be vicious. And not only would the head of state, but all people in positions of authority that had backed the present policy of South Vietnam would probably meet a very disastrous end.
So it's logical that they will continue to ask us to be there, the leaders of that government.
Yes. I would guess that we are in a situation very similar to what we are in Korea. We went into Korea when the North Koreans and the Red Chinese invaded in the early 1950s. We are still there. I've just come back from Panmunjom, and we have two full-strength U.S. Army divisions there, the 2nd and the 7th Army divisions, each with 18 to 20,000 men, and we've been there for 15 years. We have stabilized the economy of the country. We have protected the freedom of South Korea. We've done it mighty well, and no longer at a really substantial cost. we would have a very similar situation in Vietnam. The military forces that we have there, in a military sense, are all powerful. We have four big units, the 1st Cavalry, the 3rd Marines, the 101st Army, and the 173rd Reinforced Brigade. We have established armed posts or enclaves up and down the coast, and there's just no chance of being pushed out in the way the French were at Dien Bien Phu in 1954.
Bob, do you have any other comments?
Well, I thank Senator Brewster for his answer, and he certainly presents valid reasons why the government would want us to stay, but I must say in all candor that it's hard for me to believe that even if we were asked to go, that we would pack up and pull out after the commitment that we had made there, but I have to take his word for that.
Bob, I want to thank you for calling Night Call.
Well, I've enjoyed it.
Good night, sir. Mr. Bob Shack from Indianapolis, Indiana, listener on WFBM. Let's go out now to Denver, Colorado, a listener on KTLN, Mrs. Lucy M. Harms. Good evening, Mrs. Harms. Welcome to Night Call. Your comment, ma'am.
Hello.
Yes, ma'am.
My name is Lucy M. Harms from Denver, Colorado.
Yes.
And our station numbers out here happens to be KTLN.
Right.
And I'd like to know from Senator Brewster, do you believe if Henry Cabot Lodge had not returned home, do you think we would be so deeply set in this war now? Do you think we'd be in as deep as we are?
I think Ambassador Lodge is a very able spokesman for the United States and is doing an excellent job. He is carrying out our established policy, the policy of our country. And he is not acting as an individual.
Presidential election. Remember, he was brought back. Rather, he came back in order to run for nomination.
Yes, we both remember well.
I think somehow I feel that had he stayed there, we would not be in so deeply.
Senator, your feeling?
I cannot accept that premise. Ambassador Lodge is a patriotic, dedicated American. He's served in the Senate of the United States. He served with great honor and distinction in World War II in our Army.
I feel that if he'd have stayed there, we wouldn't have had all of this. You know, I'm a mother. I have two youngsters, 15 and 14. And when I see these headlines of Mr. McNamara's, Defense Robert McNamara saying we will have a long Vietnam War, I'm concerned because I want my boys to go to school, go to high school, go to college, just like other mothers. And my heart breaks for these mothers that have lost sons in this war. And the youngsters over there want to know if we are proud of them. God love them, we are proud of them. Each and every one of them, as if they were our own children.
Well, Mrs. Harms, I want to thank you for your opinion.
How can we show them that we are behind them? What can we do? What can we do with fellows like this?
Well, Mrs. Harms, we have to break our stations now, so I want to thank you for calling Night Call, and I'll address your question to the senator as soon as we return. Thank you. All right. Thank you very much for calling Night Call, Mrs. Harms. Lady from Denver, Colorado, concerned about her youngsters, might be involved in the Vietnam War. Our guest tonight is Democratic Senator Daniel Brewster of Maryland. Our topic, what is the war doing to the people of Vietnam? You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Look, I'm quite self-sufficient. I made myself what I am, thank you.
But don't you think all of us occasionally could use a little divine,
Gee, I gotta run. Here's my card, anyhow. I'm a vice president now.
Well, good.
Yes, indeed.
But your name, it's just penciled in here.
Well, there's a big turnover in personnel. You know how it is.
Uh-huh. Well, that's just about how it is in life, isn't it?
Pardon?
We're all just penciled in.
Where you get the idea you can make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church.
This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Our guest tonight, Democratic Senator Daniel Brewster of Maryland. Our topic, what is the war doing to the people of Vietnam? If you'd like to join us here on Night Call and express your opinion or ask a question of the senator, give us a call here at area code 313-846-6601. Remember, you may call from anywhere, and you may reverse the charges. You may call collect. Area code 313-846-6601. If you get a busy signal, please hang up and dial us again. Our Night Call lines are now open. Senator, just before we took the break, Mrs. Harms from Denver, Colorado, was wondering how long the war might last. What do you think?
The best answer to this question, an all-important one, must necessarily come from Hanoi or Peking or perhaps even Moscow. Very second, the North Vietnamese stop their aggression, then the war will be over. But until they do that, it will continue.
We have a caller now standing by in Indianapolis, Indiana, Senator Brewster, a gentleman listening on WFBM, Mr. Tom Pearson. Good evening, Mr. Pearson. You're on Night Call. Your comments, sir, please.
Yes, I have two questions for Senator Brewster. Number one, I'd like to know who in the government is in charge of our policy and procedures in Vietnam. And number two, he made a statement, I believe, that a little earlier, that they could eliminate and end the war in Vietnam by bombing and wiping off the military and industrial installations within North Vietnam. And I wonder why they do not do this, rather than to go on week after week and month after month spending millions of dollars and also many American lives.
Senator, two questions for you.
Well, now, first of all, who's in charge? Well, this is very simple. The President of the United States, Lyndon Johnson, is the man that's in charge, and working for him are, of course, his cabinet, and in particular, the Secretary of Defense, Mr. McNamara. Now, behind the immediate actions is the Congress of the United States, because we must supply the money. And without the money, then any one of many operations would come to an end. Secondly, why do we not bomb North Vietnam and utterly devastate it and destroy it the same way we went in and dropped nuclear weapons on Nagasaki or Hiroshima or in Germany? This would really serve no useful purpose. We're not trying to wipe out a cities or a civilian population. We're not trying to crush a war machine in the sense we were doing in the 1940s. What we're doing is attempting to prevent aggression and to really win a peace, to convert people, to show them that what they're doing or have been doing is wrong.
Doesn't it seem that after France has fooled with these people for a period of, 10, 12, or 15 years, that this isn't the proper procedure to follow?
France was cast in a very different posture than we are. France was a colonial power and had control most of what was then called French Indochina over a period of a good many years. And when they were overthrown in 1954, it was truly a nationalistic effort. This is not the case now. And our military position is infinitely more powerful and much more effective than the position that the French held when they were there. I've said before, there's no chance in the world that we're going to get pushed out.
Senator, have you heard the comment that some people in Vietnam, both South and North, feel that our power and our forces there are just an extension of colonialism, that we have taken up where the French left off? Have you ever heard that charge?
Certainly I've heard it. This charge has been made, and I think it's entirely inaccurate. I question some of the policies that we followed in the late 40s and early 50s, where we unquestionably supported the French endeavors there and also backed up some of our longtime friends who were colonial powers. We should have recognized, as we now do, the absolute will of people all around the world to establish their own independence, their own government, and not to be subjugated by any European or any other country.
Senator, may I ask one more question here? Tom?
Yes.
In fact, I'll throw this out to both of you. Are you familiar with the Geneva Accords? Were they not to have an election or a plebiscite whereby the North and the South were to determine what type of government they wanted to have, and that because the Diem regime felt that they were going to lose the election, that the communists would win, they refused, that they broke this accord. Do you feel that this might be a reason that the North started to infiltrate? In fact, I have read that this was the time that they infiltrated. It was not until the Diem regime broke this agreement. Would you care to comment on that?
Clearly, the Geneva Agreement of 1954 stated that refugees would be traded back and forth, and that ultimately there would be a free democratic election. But the point, the all-important point is that you cannot have a free democratic election in a communist country. We would be very happy to see a free choice tomorrow in North Vietnam. We would like very much to see a free election in East Germany or in North Korea, where you would have people actually having the chance to cast their vote for those people or those propositions that they believe to be true. But in a communist country where you have a police state, pure and simple, you cannot have a free election. So therefore, the people of South Vietnam, or the establishment, the government in South Vietnam, has never gone along with a stacked deck, which you would have if you had a communist-dominated majority throwing their full weight behind their puppets.
But weren't the wasn't the elections to be held under the UN or the International Control Commission that set up the Geneva Agreement or Accords? Wouldn't that be free? Wouldn't that be fair? Or are we to assume that the Geneva Accords and the International Control Commission, which would handle the elections, were communist-dominated?
We have, since World War II, we have not seen a free election in the sense that you and I understand it in any country that is dominated by the communists. Believe me, this is one thing we would like to see. And the classic example of it is, of course, East Germany. But it just is not going to work as long as you have the tyranny that the communists impose on the people, on any one of these countries.
Tom, would you care to comment?
Yes, I have one other question in regards to my second question. Of course, the North Vietnam Vietnamese are the aggressor, and I can't see where or how anyone could determine any difference between these people in North Vietnam than they could World War II as far as Germany or Japan was concerned. And also, it's not talking about going in there with nuclear weapons and knocking out the entire population, but merely the industrial sites and the military sites. And I can't see why they should let this thing go on. They should very definitely be able to go into the homeland of the aggressor and eliminate these situations, which would very definitely eliminate, or it would seem like shorten the war or cripple their powers completely.
We have left ourselves several options. In other words, we're using more and more force. And we still have a great deal more we can use. And the next step will be, I believe, to close off the ports of North Vietnam, the port of Hanoi, Haiphong. I think we should, and I believe we will, mine this port or effectively close it in the military sense in the very near future, because it is through this port that they receive all their supplies. I don't think we really help ourselves, help the free world, help our friends by going in and bombing, massively bombing civilian centers.
Tom, I want to thank you for calling NICOL and thank you for your comments. Mr. Tom Pearson, a gentleman from Indianapolis, Indiana, listening on WFBN. Let's go out to Syracuse, New York now, a listener on WBAL from Baltimore, Mr. Nelson Niemer. Good evening, Nelson. Your comment, please.
Two questions. One, do you think we'd be there if the American people in general had to say about it before we went in?
In other words, if the American people had put it to a vote, do you think that they would have voted to go there?
Yes, went over there to lose all our boys and everything. If the people had had a voice in the thing and not just the president saying it.
My answer to that question is yes. The I've talked to hundreds, thousands of our people overseas and in this country and in my home state of Maryland. And I believe very sincerely that the great majority of all Americans support our foreign policy and our opposition to aggression in South Vietnam. I think we learned the hard way that those in my generation that fought through World War II and saw what happened when we didn't oppose something that was essentially evil, when we didn't stand up to Hitler, when he sent his divisions into the Rhineland, two French divisions could have stopped him, just that simple. But we didn't have enough guts. We didn't have enough foresight to even stop shipping scrap metal to the Japanese. And so, at a later date, only a few years later, we had to spend hundreds of thousands of our young men and dollars without end to prevent what we could have prevented very simply at the start.
And you had another question, Nelson.
Yes. How do we know, from what I'm listening and what I'm reading and what I'm hearing, how do we know that this thing won't go on indefinitely when the Chinese, North Vietnam, can keep pouring thousands after thousands, and they have, I understand, millions, and if they want to keep this thing going on for years, isn't it kind of foolish to keep wasting our youth over there to just keep waiting, 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 and them playing cat and mouse with us and keep shoving down fresh troops all the time, and it's just a bloody old battleground for years and years and years. It seems to me it doesn't make sense.
Senator, would you care to comment?
The standing army of North Vietnam approximates 500,000 men, and they have not been committed in full force, of course, so they have sent down easily recognizable units. There have been no Red Chinese involved, other than perhaps in the capacity of advisors or tacticians, but we have not hit forces of Red China as we had in North Korea. I can just throw the ball back to you. What else can we do? We have given our word to defend the freedom of these people. We found out from long experience when we back down and we chicken out, we pay a much higher cost later on.
Nelson, would you care to comment?
Question I haven't any answer to, but I was very much interested in how we're going to stop this thing if they keep foreign men in there and China keeps sneaking, if she sneaks them in there under another guise, and we just keep pouring young men over there, and it's just a long drawn until she bleeds our young men to death.
Mr. Niemer, I want to thank you for your comments, and thank you for calling Night Call.
Me on the program.
Yes, sir. Mr. Nelson Niemer from Syracuse, New York, listening on WBAL out of Baltimore. Our guest tonight is Democratic Senator Daniel Brewster of Maryland. Our topic, what is the war doing to the people of Vietnam? You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Busy America! Busy America! Busy making money, busy buying gadgets, busy keeping up with you-know-who.
Is that your idea of fulfillment?
Don't you wonder if there's more to life than just that rat race with no finish line? Where do you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb? Without him, it's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by your Council of Churches.
This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
And our guest tonight is Democratic Senator Daniel Brewster of Maryland. And Senator Brewster just returned from Vietnam and is a member of the powerful Armed Services Committee of the Senate. So if you'd like to make a comment on Vietnam or what is the war doing to the people of Vietnam, give us a call here at Night Call. Area code 313-846-6601. Remember, you may call from anywhere, and you may reverse the charges. Senator, I have a caller standing by in Bloomington, Indiana, a listener on WFBM, Mr. Bob Hoop. Good evening, Bob. Welcome to Night Call.
Thanks, sir.
Your comment, please.
Yes, I would like to ask the Senator a couple of questions.
Yes, sir.
One is, there seem to be two basic reasons why we're in Vietnam. One is for our own security, that we wish to prevent aggression now, so that we can prevent the direct aggression against the United States from ever occurring. And the second reason seems to be to protect the freedom of Vietnamese people. Senator, would you please comment on which of these seems to be the more important in our administration? Are they approximately equal?
Well, we have to be entirely pragmatic about it. The most important single reason is our own security. We had to make the decision last year or a couple of years ago, was it essential to the security of the United States that we prevent aggression in Southeast Asia? We made that decision, pure and simple. If we did not think it was essential to the security of the United States, then it would make very little sense to send all of our men over there and suffer the casualties we have suffered. Now, as a backup and answer to your second question, we've also given our word in the international community that we would defend the liberty and freedom of the Republic of South Vietnam. And this we are doing. But there is a bottom to our pocketbook. There's an end to our resources. And we cannot arbitrarily say we will defend every country the world around
Bob, you had another question.
Yes. The senator mentioned that he didn't want you to make the generalization that all communist leaders are bad for their people. But yet I found a problem in that he seems to feel that you know, communist countries, you know, do not have freedom, that they are somewhat evil, at least by implication and so forth. I don't understand how these two philosophies can fit together. I mean, if they're not all bad for the people, then why are all communist countries seem to lack freedom and seem to be evil and so forth? Do I make myself very clear?
Well, I think you're getting at something.
I'm not sure I understand the question, but from my knowledge of history and contemporary history, the people that live in communist countries do not enjoy the freedom of choice, the civil liberties, the many pleasant things that go with life in the United States or in a democracy. Communism is another type of totalitarianism, and it's something we have consistently opposed, and certainly as long as I have a voice, we'll continue to oppose.
Senator, was General Key elected by the people of South Vietnam?
No, he was not elected. They have not had a national election there in the last several years. He was developed by the power structure, military and civilian, in the country.
Well, is this democratic?
I begin to say that South Vietnam has a democratic government in the sense that we understand it, but they have a far better deal for their people than those that live in North Vietnam. And they just want to be left alone. This is the point. They've seen enough of war. The women, they want to send their children to school, they want to feed them, they want to collect their rice, they want to end this terrorism that is really difficult.
Do you think that the North Vietnamese women might feel the same way?
Well, now, I'm not in a position to comment on that, but I wouldn't be surprised.
If the United States did move out of North Vietnam, or out of South Vietnam, what do you think would happen? Would peace come to the country, or would this just be a peace under communist terms?
If we left tomorrow, the day after tomorrow, the present government in Saigon would collapse, and shortly thereafter, in a matter of weeks, you would have the communists take over the country. And I believe that following hard on the heels of that takeover, you would see the entire peninsula, Malayan Peninsula, all their neighbors, Thailand, Laos, Cambodia, Burma, Malaysia, Indonesia, all would go communistic.
Well, now, why are the North Vietnamese so strong then? In other words, if they can take over, why can't the South Vietnamese take over and take over the North? I understand that General Key formed a liberation front for the North, such as the Vietnamese in the North have developed for the South. Are the communists in Vietnam, in North Vietnam, 9 feet tall?
Well, General Key's government controlled fully two-thirds and probably more of the population of South Vietnam. Not that much the territory, because the communists do have the hill lands and part of the Mekong Delta where they have established control, and the government we recognize in the South has been unable to push them out entirely.
Bob, did you have any other further comments?
Yes, I would like to ask one more question, Senator, if I could.
Could you speak up a little, Bob, please?
Yes, I would like to ask one more question, if I could.
Yes, sir.
Recently, there's been a great deal of discussion on the possibility that some of the figures on our fatalities and loss of aircraft are really higher than the published report. I was wondering if the senator could discuss the possibility of this, and if it is true that the published reports are not quite accurate, why this is being done.
In other words, you feel that maybe the American people aren't getting the truth? Is that what you're asking, Bob?
Yes, I've heard this. I don't know myself.
Well, I know the answer to this, pure and simple. We do not publish day-by-day casualties because there's an obvious need not to tell your enemy how many men or how many planes you've lost in a particular battle, because then he can make combat decisions that would be very harmful to us. But our weekly total figures are absolutely accurate, and nothing is being hidden from the American people.
Bob, there's your answer, and I want to thank you for calling Night Call.
All right. Thank you very much, sir.
Mr. Bob Hoop, a gentleman from Bloomington, Indiana, listening on WFBM. Senator, we have about a minute remaining, and let me ask you the question, the topic tonight. What do you think the war is doing to the people of Vietnam, both South and North?
The war is devastating their country, and unless the aggression stops from the North, it's going to get worse. They have already suffered casualties in proportion far in excess of what we suffered in World War II. And I am convinced, I know in the South and I believe in the North, that they would like to see the war end.
This would be the people of the South and the North?
Yes.
Well, why haven't they come together? What's the big hold up here?
Well, the South, very simply, just wants to be let alone. The North is controlled by a communist government that, though they do not accept the Red Chinese, have adopted the harsh, brutal line of Peking. Just as the same line that Stalin had in the USSR. Tough, rough, and dedicated to the proposition that communism should take over by force.
Senator, I want to thank you for being our guest on Night Call.
Thank you very much, Russell.
Our guest tonight... Thank you, sir. Our guest tonight was Democratic Senator Daniel Brewster of Maryland, and our topic, What is the War Doing to the People of Vietnam? Tomorrow night on Night Call, our guest is Mr. Warren Wiggins. He's Deputy Director of the Peace Corps. Our topic, What is the Peace Corps all about? Until tomorrow night, this is Gibb wishing you good luck and Godspeed.
Night Call is produced by the Methodist Church in cooperation with the National Council of Churches and this radio station. As a radio forum dedicated to the frank discussion of vital issues of daily life. Night Call encourages its participants to express freely and responsibly their own personal opinions.